I'll give you one example. We worked with a customer who has tons and tons of video footage from all kinds of concerts from years and years of shooting. That a lot of that data sat on colder storage. The problem is that when an event happens, when a certain pop star has a birthday or dies or something happens, all of the media outlets want to grab all of the old snippets from there, from those video footage to compile these retrospectives. Well, all of that is sitting on various forms of cold data, but they need it accessible instantly.
Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. And I'm super excited today to have this discussion around future-proofing your data and also some ways that you can also make sure that you are properly storing data in the cloud and keeping it protected as well. I have Gleb Budman on, who is the CEO and chairperson at Backblaze on today. So welcome to the Gumbo, Gleb. How are you?
Thanks, Dimitris. Good to see you. Good to be on here.
I always like to ask my guests to tell the audience who you are and I guess what's your mission right now.
Yeah, so I'm also one of the founders. So I've been working on Backblaze for about 17 years now, all the way back since 2007. We actually, my co-founders and I actually worked on two other tech companies before in the years past, and both of those were venture funded. Both of those were successfully acquired. One was in the early AI space. One was in the email security space. And then we started Backblaze to help everybody with all the crazy exponential growth in data and all the things you need to do with it. So our mission fundamentally is making it astonishingly easy to store, protect, and use your data.
Awesome. That's a great mission. We need missions like that today because data is not going to shrink. And also privacy and compliance and regulations and ransomware, things like that are continuing to just grow like wildfire. So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned your history and you're also one of the founders as well. And Backblaze has a fascinating journey just from being a bootstrap company to also going public as well. What were the most significant challenges that you faced along the way? And also, how did you maintain focus on your vision to kind of stay true there?
So it's certainly been a journey. The five of us started the company in 07. We originally were starting the company to just make it really easy to have backups of your data. And that was the original idea. We were going to originally put that data on Amazon. And then we did the math and realized that we were going to lose money on every single customer based on how much Amazon was going to charge us. So that actually set us down the path of designing and building our own cloud storage infrastructure to support what we were trying to service for our customers. In terms of the bootstrapping piece of it, so the prior two companies, like I said, were venture funded. When we started Backblaze, we actually said, we're going to do it differently. We're going to quit our jobs, start Backblaze, commit to each other for 1 year with no salary, just to focus on building the company. And what we said was we wanted to focus on the customers, the product, and the culture. And we were going to go 1 year with no salary. And then we were hoping that at the end of that year, 1 year, we could start paying ourselves salary. In reality, we went for a year with no salary, then another half year with no salary, then about a year at minimum wage, then another year at roughly two times minimum wage. And so it was a lot of not just blood, sweat, and tears that we put into Backblaze, but a lot of going without any money as well. So fundamentally, that was because we believed in what we're trying to solve and felt like we really wanted to make it happen. So it took a lot to do that. And we wrote on the whiteboard originally when we were all sitting around at that point saying, well, what are the outcomes for this company? And we said, well, maybe we'll stay private forever. Maybe we'll raise some venture funding. Maybe we'll get acquired. Maybe the company will go public. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Demetrius, the idea of taking the company public didn't feel real at the time. It was just one of the things that companies do. And it wasn't until some number of years later when we looked at it and said, you know what, I think that there really is the possibility to take the company public. And in part, the reason we decided we wanted to go down that path was we had put in blood, sweat, and tears to do it. We had all these customers who loved the company. We had employees who loved the company. We had partners who loved the company. And we felt like if it gets acquired, potentially all of that vaporizes. We wanted to build a long-term, independent public company that would be around for forever. And so that was the path.
You're definitely on that path. And you actually went public when? Was it around 2021?
It was. In November of 2021, we took the company public. And we definitely got lucky with that timing, because certainly the markets were not friendly to companies trying to go public in 22 and 23.
Yeah, I think back, I was looking at some of the history. I saw AWS, of course, were the pioneers. Of course, they had a head start and got out front as far as storing data in the cloud and kind of turning that into a whole solution and portfolio or platform that a lot of people use today. And then a couple of years after that, you and your cohorts there founded Backblaze, right? So you were kind of in that early trend as well. And you knew and felt, you know what, this seems like something that we should jump on board and at least see if we could do some, you know, have some cost efficiencies and also maybe try to get some of the smaller customers, right? Or some of the mid-market customers as well. And so I definitely take my hat off to you for that. One of the things that
people definitely thought we were crazy in terms of trying to build something and compete with Amazon. And at the time we said, it's not about specifically competing with Amazon. It's just, this is what our customers are asking us for. And so how do we support our customers? And so we ended up designing a system that costs about a fifth of the price point of what Amazon charges. And we offer free egress and more. But that really was driven less about trying to compete with Amazon initially and more about just what do our customers want from us.
Yeah. Okay. And also, I wanted to ask you as well, there's a lot of trends that are happening right now. And particularly, of course, I mentioned earlier that we have lots of data. The volume of data generated today is just crazy. And what are some of the trends that you're seeing in how organizations manage this explosion of data? And how do you think that these trends will evolve in the next, I won't even say 5 years because that's just way too far out, but let's say over the next year, since things are moving so fast.
So certainly the volume of data that's getting created is pretty wild. And it's been created from all the different sources that it used to be. It used to be that data would get created because you're typing a Word document or because you're taking a photo or because you're creating it, shooting a video. Now, all the Gen AI is also generating data at a large pace. And all of the models that are getting trained in AI need a tremendous amount of data to get trained. So the volume of data is certainly exploding. I think one of the things that we're seeing is the complexity of how you need to deal with that data is also increasing. And you mentioned some of the items, but there are increasing privacy regulations and data regulations that companies need to adhere to, while at the same time protecting that data from attacks, ransomware and cybersecurity attacks. And at the same time as that, trying to take advantage of that data, because one of the key differentiators, one of the key ways that companies succeed is by making the best use of the data they have. So they can't just stick it in an archive and say, okay, it's safe because it's just sitting on tape somewhere, then you're not using it. So the companies are increasingly trying to actually get access to and have the data be available in real time. And then the last part of it is the cost implications. So because you have more and more data, because you're using it more and more, all of those things are driving up expenses at a time where a lot of companies are looking for, how do I increase my margin? How do I decrease my costs. And so they're trying to figure out how to do that. So that's the complexity in the trend lines for a lot of companies out there as it relates to their data.
And I know we used to have some themes around watching cost and efficiencies just around cost. And it used to be a big thing where everyone used to talk about, you know, what that cost were. And so just talking about balancing cost, and then you also want to make sure if you're cutting costs that you still have that performance that you need and also the simplicity that you need as well. So I want to ask, what about with, let's say, data storage solutions that are often caught between that affordability and high performance? You need these IOPS, you need to be able to get the data back quicker. What do you think is the right balance for businesses and especially, let's say, SMBs to strive for when it comes to cost, performance, and simplicity?
Yeah, so it's certainly, there's a certain part of it, which is understanding what data you have and what you need to do with it. The thing that's made that more complicated is it used to be that the line was more crisp between data sets. So you had the data that you knew you were actively working with, and you wanted that on some type of hot storage that was available and high performance. And then you had the data that you weren't actively working with, and you could put that on more archival type tiers. One of the things that's gotten more complex is that because you want to train your information, and because a lot of times the data that you haven't used for a while is still all of a sudden necessary. So I'll give you one example. Mm-hmm. We worked with a customer who has tons and tons of video footage from all kinds of concerts from years and years of shooting. That a lot of that data sat on colder storage. The problem is that when an event happens, when a certain pop star has a birthday or dies or something happens, all of the media outlets want to grab all of the old snippets from there, from those video footage to compile these retrospectives. Well, all of that is sitting on various forms of cold data, but they need it accessible instantly. And you never know what data is going to be necessary. So what we're finding is that increasingly, customers are wanting to keep all of the data available on a hot tier, even though they may not be using that data instantly actively at that moment, because they may need it tomorrow. And so that's some of one of the challenges. The other thing that we're seeing is that it used to be what we call Cloud 1.0. Cloud 1.0 is where customers had all their data inside of one single cloud, AWS or Google or something. And now increasingly we're seeing the world shift to Cloud 2.0, where customers are saying, I want my data here, but I also need to use it with the GPUs that are over there. I need to use it with the model that's over there. I need to use it with this other service that's over here, whether that's GPUs, CDNs, edge compute, all the different things. And so in order for that to be the case, they need to get their data in different places. And egress fees from these traditional cloud providers are one of the things that's preventing them and driving up their costs. So what we're seeing is, and one of the reasons why Backblaze has leaned into offering low-cost, high-performance storage with no egress, is because that's what customers are saying they need, right? They need their data available so they can use it how they want, but they also need to be able to get it to wherever they need it to go. And so that's the structure that we're trying to address, because that's where things are headed for the customers.
Okay. Very insightful there. And we haven't talked about some of the other hot topics. Of course, we have AI. We'll get to AI. But as far as data resilience, and we're in 2025 now, and so cyber threats and things like ransomware, they are going to continue to proliferate. It's not going to slow down at all. But what advice would you give to organizations looking to build resilient data management and also recovery strategies in this current landscape that we're in now? Because there's a lot of changes that are happening like day by day, and every day you can't imagine like what's going to happen globally, right? Geopolitical things to worry about. Lots of changes around in the U.S. In the White House. It's a lot to worry about right now.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming increasingly more complicated for companies out there to handle all of this. And like you said, ransomware and other cybersecurity threats are certainly not going away. They're getting more and more frequent and they're getting more sophisticated. The first thing to do is just have your data somewhere where it's offsite. That's an easy step. The second step, which is also fairly easy, is ensure that it's object locked. So Backblaze offers object lock. Other companies also offer object lock. It basically is a way of saying that make sure that you have your data be not deletable, not ransomwareable, and by external parties. And so that's what I see as low-hanging fruit for companies to protect themselves. One of the most common ways that companies get ransomware is still phishing attacks. And make sure that your administrators all have multi-factor authentication turned on any accounts that they have that have access to data in the system. That's, again, it's low-hanging fruit to just protect the data systems. There's a common backup strategy, 3-2-1, have your data distributed in three places, two different types, one off-site. That's just general good behavior for protecting your data. One more sophisticated approach for companies that really want to take their data protection to the next level is actually having your data in two separate cloud providers.
Okay.
And we see some of our customers doing this because it for example, one of the customers I know that they had all their data inside of AWS. And what they did was they had some outages and some issues that they were starting to think, well, maybe we need a second provider. They made a full copy of all of their data into Backblaze. Mm-hmm. They didn't get rid of AWS, but they now have the data in both. And what that provides them is actually a really interesting layer of protection, because since Backblaze and Amazon have, it's two different sites, two different clouds, two different account provider accounts, etc. If an employee gets phished, and even if they were somehow able to get into their account, they're probably not going to be able to get into the two different accounts. It's just a full, it's better than having your data in two different locations. It's better than having your data in two different regions or two different formats. It's actually full stack separation of the data. Now, the interesting thing is, depending on the use case, depending on how you use your data, you may be able to do that and actually decrease your cost instead of increasing your cost. The way that this customer did that was they were previously egressing their data out of Amazon to a CDN provider to get their data out. The amount they were paying in egress was more than what it cost them to add Backblaze as a second location for the data. And since we have free egress, they were able to make us the primary in sending the data to the CDN. What that did was it more than doubled the durability, but it decreased their total cost of ownership in half. And that's something that I think is quite replicable for any company that is storing data with a traditional cloud provider, but egressing it into a Fastly, a Cloudflare, an Akamai, any of the various edge and CDN providers out there. So it's a great way of making sure that the data is incredibly resilient from various kinds of attack.
There's a new data center that came online, right? New Canadian data center back a few weeks ago. So what are your views on kind of where we're headed? It seems like we're going to be landlocked and energy locked. And I mean, it's going to be a lot of challenges for infrastructure around data centers. And I've also seen nuclear energy, right? That's a big game, lots of billions of dollars due to AI that's consuming all the resources and everyone's hungry for power. What advice would you give to someone out there that is looking for a data center space and just trying to keep up with the future of where power and energy and sustainability is headed?
So I think it depends on the customer type and what your customers or the listeners are trying to do. I think many customers are not needing to worry about that directly because they're relying on and the cloud providers are then responsible for figuring that out, right? So whether it's Amazon, Google, Backblaze, it's our responsibility to take care of figuring out the locations, figuring out how to get enough power, et cetera. So for customers who leverage the cloud, conveniently, they don't have to worry about that so much. If they're building out their own on-premises infrastructure, then they have to worry about those components. Data centers are very full, especially in popular areas. It's less than 1% vacancy in a lot of the major metropolitan areas for data centers. From a power usage perspective, AI is certainly taking a lot of the capacity in these spaces. There's a lot that's happening to drive that. I think one of the things, if companies are trying to build out their own locations, their own data centers, one of the things to consider is if you don't need to be in a specific location, that gives you a lot more flexibility. Sometimes companies think, oh, I need my data center close to my office. And I've asked them before, where are all your customers? Oh, well, our customers are all over the world. Your customers are all over the world accessing the data center. Why do you need a data center that's close to your office? And sometimes they do because that's where the people are and the people are the ones who are changing systems, et cetera. But if you have flexibility around where to put the data centers, certainly there, or where to put your servers, certainly there's different locations which are more available than others. If you're very specific on it has to be in this particular location and that location is a major metropolitan area, you're going to have higher prices, more limited capacity. But again, that's, I think, a lot of the reason why a lot of companies choose to leverage the cloud, because this is not their area of expertise.
Yeah, some people still have to manage some on-prem infrastructure, but definitely lots of companies are migrating all of their workloads or most of them to the cloud. That's going to be a trend that's going to continue here anyway. And one final question for you is just around your skill set and your leadership ability. You've been around for a while, just being a leader. What is your leadership principles or some of your lessons that have been most critical in, let's say, fostering innovation and staying competitive in such a dynamic industry like cloud storage and backup?
So one of the things that we've tried very much to do is ensure that everybody at the company feels like they are in it together. And we hire a lot of smart people. I'm constantly surprised pleasantly at ideas that come from all corners of the organization. And part of the way that those ideas can be brought up to the surface is if everybody feels like we're open, we're transparent, their ideas are welcome, and they are in it together. And so historically, we've probably over-rotated even on that. We used to have all of us sit in one lunchroom together with 50 people and discuss all of every single thing that was going on. We're too large for that to happen now, but we still try to keep the same ethos that it's not up. It's not for someone in some ivory tower to say, this is the innovation. It's for everybody to bring that forward.
Okay. And a final plug for you, maybe details around maybe accessing Backblaze or a book that you've written or that you're working on, something you're working on though, that you would like to share with the Gumbo audience.
Yeah, I would love it for people to come and go to backblaze.com. You can try the services for free. We offer free storage on the site and free trials on the site. Give that a try. Also, I would recommend backblaze.com/blog. We have one of the most widely read storage blogs on the planet, about 3 million people a year. One of the things that we publish on there are hard drive reliability statistics. People love that. We have a few hundred thousand hard drives in our systems. We track their durability carefully, and we publish statistics on all of that and insights. And there's one coming up soon on our site. And so that's another fun place to just learn more about storage in general.
Yeah, I have some hard drive stories. I remember when data domain was a big thing because I worked for EMC for almost 7 years and was a part of the whole transition when Data Domain was purchased, EMC, and then Dell Technologies. You probably know the history around that, but there were lots of, like, the more hard drives you have, the more failure.
People are curious about the hard drives and reliability. They can try to find that there's a bathtub curve of hard drive reliability. I guess I'll challenge people to go and try to find out what the bathtub curve is of hard drives.
Bathtub curve?
The bathtub curve of hard drive reliability.
All right. Okay, one final plug as well. Check us out on YouTube. We're at Data Protection Gumbo there. We also have a backup and recovery professionals LinkedIn group with 26,000 people in that group. So just go check it out as well. We'd love to have you. And Gleb, thank you again for being a guest here on Data Protection Gumbo.
Thanks, Dimitri.